Alrighty, guys. One sec. Let me just shut this door. Come and sit down. And welcome you to another episode of Pete's Two Cents. So this is where we are hanging out. There's no transcript. Just let me open my Pepsi here. There's no transcript, but we just get to hang out and work on some listening comprehension whilst I give you a bit of a rant, I guess, or I just sort of tell you about my day, tell you about what's going on in my life, answer some questions, all that sort of stuff. So sorry, it has been a little while between drinks. It's a good little expression for you there, guys, to be a little while between drinks. That's kind of like, so for instance, I guess this is the perfect example, right? I haven't recorded one of these episodes for probably a few months now. So that would be like one drink. And then I'm recording one today, so that's the second drink, but it's been a long time between drinks, if that makes sense. So it's been a long time between sessions, between, I guess you could use this socially, if you were catching up with people and you hadn't caught up with someone for ages, you know, maybe someone you haven't seen since primary school, you'd be like, wow, that was quite a while between drinks. Anyway, so yeah, I am currently chilling at home by myself. It is Monday at the moment when I recorded this, and my kids are at daycare, which is amazing. They are finally both at daycare. We've had so many goddamn illnesses in the house. I got some horrible chest infection that I half suspect may have been COVID, although I didn't have the excruciating body pain and fever and all of that sort of stuff. I think I did have a fever, but it wasn't like it wasn't how a lot of people have described it, so I'm not sure. And I did some rat tests, and they came back negative, so who knows? But I've had this bloody post-viral cough, as you can probably hear, where I'm constantly having to clear my throat. Even, it's probably 6 weeks since I've had the virus, since I healed up from it, so that has been really annoying. And then the other week, one of them bloody brought back gastroenteritis from daycare. So, gastro is effectively a stomach bug. It's a virus that you get, I think you get it from the feces of children, right? So, to sort of paint you a pretty picture. And so, just through the process of having small children who wear nappies, it is inevitable that when they go to daycare, hands go in different places, things go in mouths, and they end up infected with this sort of stomach bug virus and then bring it home and give it to everyone else. So, I got smashed with that about 2 weeks ago as well, which was brilliant. And then Joey came back from daycare the other day with what we suspect is hand, foot, and mouth. I think, I don't know if it's called hand, foot, and mouth disease, but it's a virus that little kids get where they get sort of like lesions or blisters on their hands and feet and mouths, as you may have guessed from the name of the virus, hand, foot, and mouth. And so, she couldn't go to daycare because of this. And Kel, Joey's mum, has been working a lot. So, I have been on dad duty quite a lot. I've been taking care of these little munchikins, these little kids, quite a lot in the evenings and putting them to bed, cleaning them, brushing their teeth, all that sort of stuff. But they are such a handful, I'll tell you what, guys. And Joey still hasn't slept through the night. She is almost, in fact, I think today she's 14 months old and she still hasn't managed to have a full night's sleep. She pretty much always wakes up at midnight and then 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 6 o'clock, screaming, like literally screaming, screaming the house down. And it's just brutal. It's just, man, if you couldn't laugh, you'd cry, right? Anyway, sorry for bitching about you, Joey. We love you to pieces, but man, you are hard work. Noah's going well. We cut his hair. I think you guys may or may not have seen that on social media. If you've seen Noah recently, we cut his long, luscious locks of hair that he had because it was sort of getting everywhere, getting in his face and annoying him. He'd be eating and shake his head and, you know, end up with his hair in his food. So, we ended up giving him a little, what would you say? Just sort of a buzz cut, I guess, you know, kind of trim the sides, tops a little bit longer, and now he looks like just, yeah, a young man. You can see his neck finally. So, he suddenly had this different appearance about him after he had this haircut. It was like he was a different person. So, That was really cool. It was really interesting, but I think we're going to miss the cute little boy that had long hair, long, luscious locks eventually. So, yeah, let me have a drink. So, man, oh, loads has been going on, right, since we last talked, at least in this capacity. Australia's just called an election, or at least ScoMo has called an election. That's on, I think, May the 21st, if I recall correctly. So, it's like 6 weeks from now, and hopefully Australia will have a new prime minister, a new political party. Hopefully Labor ends up in power, because yeah, you guys know my stance on ScoMo and the Liberal Party. It's just I guess we're not transcribing this, so I can probably swear, it's a clusterfuck. So many people have come out and just said how much of a horrible person ScoMo is, who are also in the Liberal Party, which is effectively unheard of. There have been like five different people come out and reveal text messages. Gladys Berejiklian, Malcolm Turnbull. Who else has come out? There's been two other MPs that recently retired and came out and said that. Barnaby Joyce came out as well whilst he was, I think, the shadow prime minister or whatever it's called, the deputy prime minister or whatever. I'm horrible with Australian politics. Anyway, yeah, so hopefully, at least from my point of view, I hope we end up with Albanese. And I mean, I don't necessarily agree with a lot of what Labor does, and it is kind of a dark horse, a kind of a wild card. Who knows what he's going to be like, but I think at this point, it's kind of like, just give us something different. Like, Jesus, give us something different. So yeah, there's been that, there's been the war in Ukraine, that's been raging on and on and on, you know, and again, all my Ukrainian and Russian listeners, you know, I feel for you guys. Obviously, the Russians that are not pro the war in Ukraine, those who are living overseas and are really stressed out about this stuff too, and are wishing the best for Ukrainians. I hope you guys enjoyed the Voices of Ukraine and Voices of Russia episodes. I'm thinking I will try and do those sorts of episodes more frequently, probably once every couple of months or something, and I'll feature a different country. It may not necessarily be incredibly negative, you know, covering tragedies or wars or, you know, horrible things going on. Perhaps we'll just interview a group of people from a specific country and, you know, get to hear what their day-to-day life is like, get to hear about their culture. It's a great way, I think, to sort of include your voices on the podcast too, guys, you as listeners. So, I'm still yet to sort of figure out how this would work. Perhaps I can set up a Google Doc form or something, or a survey where you guys could even just vote on the country that you would like to hear about, to hear from. And then I can contact my followers and listeners and give you guys who are from that country a chance to tell us your story, tell us what your country is like, interesting aspects to your culture, everything like that. So, yeah, I guess shoot me a message or something if you think that's a good idea. Let me know if that's something you'd like to listen to, something that would, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of nice to learn about other cultures and share these things to sort of just further connect the world, right? So that you can learn about what's life like in places like, you know, Vietnam or in Mexico or in Saudi Arabia, all those sorts of things where the average person never really gets to hear about these things from the horse's mouth, right? From the source, the original source, from people who come from that place. It's pretty rare. So, what else have we got that we can chat about? I got a question here on Facebook, which was kind of the impetus for putting this episode together. And I thought I would obviously chat about that. So, this comes from someone called Vu from Vietnam. I won't say your full name so that you can remain anonymous. And Vu asked, how are you? I'm good. What do you think about learning a third language when the second language hasn't reached an advanced level yet? Will learning the third language ruin the second language? Cheers. So, I was chatting a little bit with Vu, and I think I was sort of like initially, you know, well, it depends on how much spare time you have and what your goals are, really. Like, I get these questions quite a lot where people are like, how do I learn English? Or what level should I aim for? Should I learn other languages? And a lot of the time, I think, guys, before asking me those sorts of questions, you got to work out what your goals are and how much spare time you have to put towards trying to achieve those goals. And then, obviously, you know, you can ask for further feedback on that sort of thing. But a big thing for me, at least, as you guys will know, I recently started learning Ukrainian, is kind of like working out how much time you have devoted to this new hobby or task or skill or thing that you want to develop. What do you want to achieve by doing that, right? What are your goals? And are they kind of reasonable? Because if you think that you're going to learn, say, Ukrainian to fluency within 6 months, whilst also raising a young family, I'm talking about myself here, doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu when you can, seeing family and friends, running a business like Aussie English, you're going to need to be able to work out. So, if I want to get fluent in 6 months, that would probably require probably 6 to 8 hours of study a day. So, at least from my personal experience in learning French to fluency, I did that in about 6 months, but I was spending 4 to 8 hours a day and had learned it at school. So, that is obviously very unrealistic for me personally, in my personal situation as things currently are. I do not have that kind of spare time to put to anything, let alone learning Ukrainian. You know, I couldn't start trying to train for a marathon. I couldn't start taking up a new hobby, dog walking, swimming, could be surfing or something. There is just not, I don't have that much spare time. So, instead, at least for me personally with Ukrainian, I'm like, look, I just want to do a little bit every single day, use it as a break from my standard routine, maybe half an hour max out there, and see where it goes. You know, maybe in the future, I can just give more and more time to this hobby, to this task, to this skill that I'm trying to develop, when and if that may occur, when and if I may have spare time. But for now, I kind of just wanted to do it to, one, challenge my brain to learn a new language, learn a language that is much more different from the languages that I have currently, I am currently learning, like Portuguese and French. I don't know why I use the past tense there. You've never learnt a language, right? It's always an ongoing process. There is always more to learn, and it is also something that requires constant work to maintain. So, I hate when people use the past tense when talking about these sorts of activities. I learnt French. I've learnt it. You know, it's finished. It's done. French achieved. Skill unlocked. Next language, please. So, yeah, that is the biggest thing, I think. Working out how much time do you have and what are your goals? Are you trying to... So, in the case of Vu here, they said that they were interested in learning Japanese. To what level? Right? If you are in Vietnam, I imagine that you want to learn Japanese because you want to travel there. Maybe you've got some Japanese friends. What are you trying to achieve? Do you want to be able to use a little bit of Japanese whilst traveling, you know, so that you can order food, ask for directions, make small talk? Then I imagine that's the kind of thing that you can achieve much more quickly, and it's probably not going to affect your English if you're able to maintain English study in the meantime. And I should add, that was what Vu was saying. They were saying that they were worried that learning Japanese would affect their English. And I should, you know, look, I'm really sorry, Vu. I'm going to open up your page here. They sent me this message on Facebook, and I don't know if you are male or female, which is why I'm using the pronoun they. Okay, Vu is male, and I am also embarrassed because the way that the Vietnamese names work, I believe Vu's name is actually Le or Lee. And not Vu. Vu might be the surname at the front. Anyway, sorry about that, Lee. I'll call you Lee. So, Lee is a male. He is interested in learning Japanese, but has learned English to an intermediate level. You said you weren't that advanced, but you were worried that you were going to lose your English. So, I guess I would be thinking, what is the current routine that I have for English in order to either maintain the English that I have at the level that it currently is at, or to continue to improve my English simultaneously at the same time as learning Japanese? And how can I keep that in place whilst also learning Japanese and aiming for the goals that I have set for myself with Japanese? So, I guess ultimately here, you're trying to achieve those two goals. You don't want to lose your English. You don't want English to be negatively impacted. So, you have to work out what is the sort of minimum amount of time on task you need to spend to maintain your English. Or if you're still aiming to improve your English, what's the amount of time you need to do to keep improving it? And then you have to work out with Japanese and what your goal is, how much time does that require? And can you manage both of those things on a regular basis, I would say probably a daily basis, simultaneously next to one another without impacting other areas of your life? Because I imagine you probably, you know, have a full-time job, you might have family, you know, you might have kids and a wife, you might have other activities that you do and are involved in. And the older we get, the more, at least personally, I've realized that there's only so many hours in a day and you have to kind of choose. You know, if you want to do one thing, you can't really just give it everything, but then take on a second thing and hope to be able to do exactly the same thing there, right? Like with Ukrainian at the moment and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I would love to learn Ukrainian to fluency in 6 months, 12 months, a year and a half. And I would love to get to black belt in Jiu-Jitsu in 3, 4, 5 years. But both of those tasks are going to require an amount of effort that I can currently not muster in order to achieve those goals. So, I have to kind of be either more realistic and reset the goals or pick and choose what I want to do, right? It's all trade-offs. So, hopefully, this hasn't been a too long-winded answer for you. And hopefully, it's kind of given you some perspective because ultimately, I can't tell you what the answer is, right? You have to ask yourself these questions. How much spare time do you have? Or how much time do you have if you change what you're currently doing with other activities? And what are your goals in these languages? And then you have to work out a pattern, a routine, a schedule that's going to work for you and just hopefully keep that ongoing on a regular basis, right? That's the biggest thing, I think. If you can start with, say, Duolingo, man. Duolingo, as much as people shit on Duolingo, and that's an informal way of saying hate it, hate on it, say that it's horrible. As much as people shit on Duolingo for being, I don't know, a very simple, basic app when it comes to language learning, I think when you first start a language, it's incredibly effective at giving you exposure to that language, showing you, you know, probably in Japanese. I haven't done the Japanese course on Duolingo, but I imagine it probably shows you the 100 most common characters, teaches you how to understand and use the different alphabets that Japanese has, and then it's going to introduce you to the basic nouns and grammatical forms in that language so that later on you can sort of, you know, springboard off, you know, jump ahead into more advanced programs, courses, books, everything like that. So, I actually quite like Duolingo and it's what I'm using at the moment for Ukrainian. So, yeah, I would say probably start with that and just build up a habit. Get into the habit of completing one lesson a day. You know, that'll probably take you 3 minutes. Or if you have a bit more time, you know, complete an entire... What would you say when you complete an entire... There's like different tasks on the Duolingo trees and you have to kind of repeat lessons on a single task until you've sort of maxed it out, finished it. So, you know, that would probably require maybe half an hour to an hour of work to do that for a single task. So, you kind of, you know, pick and choose how you want to do it. I would just say, though, work on getting a routine. Get a habit going, even if it's starting with just 5 minutes a day. And then if you feel like you want to do more, do 10 minutes, do 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour. And keep in mind that the daily goal is small. Try not to make it big because I've found, at least personally, and I guess anecdotally from other people I know, if you set incredibly audacious, ambitious goals for yourself when it comes to anything, it's going to become harder to complete those goals. And when you don't complete them, it's going to become harder to stay motivated and to keep showing up and then try the next day and the next day and the next day. So, I think a big key way of attacking these things and building good habits is having a minimal amount of time that is your daily minimum, right? 5 minutes. Show up, do 5 minutes. If you feel like doing more, do it. If you do not, do it the next day, right? And then you will be able to maintain that habit. And it takes, I think, I'm not sure, but I've heard it takes about 2 months to kind of get these habits ingrained. I'm not sure if that's scientifically tested or not, but it sounds right, right? It's one of those things that kind of, it sounds truthful. So, if you can do this for 2 months, right? Get on Duolingo, work on your streak and maintaining your streak, you know, doing a lesson every single day and getting that streak to a month, 2 months, 6 months, and then see how you go. But hopefully that helps. But yeah, I guess I would also probably add another dimension to this when you've got how much spare time do you have and what are your goals is probably how important are each of these things to your day-to-day life. So if English is crucial for you because you're using it at work or you're using it to communicate with a partner or you're, I don't know, you're using it in a way that is productive in your life, right? It's going to have an impact on your life, whether it's earning money or it's social. If you stop using English or stop working on English, there may be negative side effects as a result of that that could impact your life in other areas, right? So, if you suddenly just start focusing on Japanese, but you have to use English at work and your English starts getting bad, then that's obviously, you know, a big issue because you need to be able to support yourself. So, you also have to work those things out. Whereas if, say, Japanese is really important to you because you've suddenly got a job where you're working with Japanese people and they're like, look, you need to be able to communicate with Japanese people, you need to learn this language, then obviously you have to kind of reassess your goals. If English isn't as important, focus on Japanese and then come back to English in the future. On an anecdotal level, personally, I don't think you'll lose English very quickly. And you may lose the fluency and the ability to speak at the level you currently speak at. And that can happen within months if you stop using the language. I've found personally with French, that is exactly what happened. I can't have an articulated, nuanced conversation about anything in French anymore. I can barely ask for directions. However, something interesting that I have noticed is that you maintain listening comprehension far longer than fluency in a language that you are no longer actively practicing. So, with French, I can watch videos, TV, I can read books, and I can understand the majority of what is being presented to me pretty effortlessly still. And I haven't actively studied French for about 5 years now. However, if I were trying to talk, no chance. I would probably, my brain would probably start trying to push out Portuguese for all of the words that I didn't know in French, which is a weird sort of, I don't know, polyglot problem that at least I have on a personal level. I've noticed that with French. I don't know if that's because the languages are so close as well. They're both Romance languages in the Indo-European family. I don't know if it's just, you know, the words are very similar and so I want to shove the Portuguese words in there, but I've noticed that. But yeah, if you're worried about completely losing your English and think, oh no, if I start learning Japanese, almost said French, Japanese tomorrow, that my English is just going to go down the toilet, you know, all disappear overnight, then don't worry about that. That's not going to happen. But with fluency, that will diminish rapidly if you're not actively working on it. So, if you're not writing in English, you're not producing anything in English, you're not speaking or writing, you're going to lose fluency rapidly. So, yeah, and that happens. I think there's sort of like an inverse relationship with how advanced you are in the language and how quickly you lose things like fluency, how quickly you forget vocab. So, the more advanced you are, the slower that happens. Yeah, that's at least what I've noticed. But hopefully, this has given you kind of food for thought. And yeah, it'll be interesting to hear from you guys. You know, feel free to send me an email or a message and let me know what your experiences have been like learning multiple languages too. Have you noticed the same sort of things that I was talking about with French? Is that just me or is that something that happens to everyone where the moment you stop studying it, your fluency disappears, but you can still pick up a book or watch a TV show and you can understand it, you know, months, years after not studying it anymore? Or is that just me? All right, what else can we chat about? I guess giving you guys a bit of an update. I'm currently in the process of moving platforms. So, I was using WordPress for the website. I am using it currently. And a system called BuddyBoss. And I won't shit on them too much. That's going to be a recurring expression in this episode by the sounds of it. I won't complain. I won't hate on them too much. But I haven't been able to get the... They had an app that they released that was meant to pair with the website. And it cost me a lot of money to try and develop. And it just never ended up going anywhere. There were always issues. I was never able to do what I wanted to do with the app to deliver the essential aspects of Aussie English, which included, you know, things like playing the podcast audio or the transcript reader for the different memberships that I have. So, needless to say, I ended up just deciding that, okay, well, we're going to have to just change platforms here. This is a massive headache. And the other thing is too, not necessarily related to Buddy Boss, but any of you guys who know what WordPress is like, it's just a nightmare to maintain when you have heaps of different plugins, you've got a lot of sophisticated stuff happening on the back end with just managing a website, having all these different features. If one thing goes wrong, it tends to screw the website up and you have to pay, you know, people to come and fix it. My developers have to get in there and then they have to troubleshoot. They have to take like the website, duplicate it, turn off different plugins at different times to work out what the problem is, where the conflict is, and then add code or whatever to change it. And it's just a nightmare. So, I've decided that we're going to move over to a new platform called LearnWorlds. But that has been a gargantuan task. I think it's gargantuan. I don't know why that's... It's not coming to mind, the exact pronunciation. Let me check. Gargantuan definition. If you type that in, it's a good little trick for you guys. If you type in definition and then the word in Google, you will get the dictionary, the Google dictionary thing at the top. Gargantuan. Yes. Okay, I got it right. Gargantuan. Gargantuan. It means enormous, okay?
Gargantuan.
Gargantuan. The IPA is there, so you can read the International Phonetic Alphabet below the word. You can see where the emphasis is, everything like that. So, that's what I do sometimes with these rarer words. I'll look them up and be like, is that how you say it?
Gargantuan.
Gargantuan. And it's a British accent by the look of it. Look of it? By the sounds of it. Anyway, yeah, so it's been a gargantuan process moving across all the different courses, all the different quizzes, all the different episodes, and now I've got like 1,200 episodes on the podcast that I have to move across, but I think ultimately it's going to be a good decision. It's going to mean that I can use the app that they have inbuilt really easily for you guys so you can access things easily on your phones if and when you desire. And it's going to save me a lot of money as well. So, I'm looking forward to doing that probably in the next 3 months. We'll see how we go. So, stay tuned. But besides that, what are some other updates? Oh, okay. So, I think in previous episodes, I've talked about that I had an issue with cholesterol, right? So, that got resolved recently. I had another blood test. So, this was 4 months after the previous blood test. And I'd been on a keto diet. So, any of you guys who know what the keto diet is knows that it is high in protein and fat, right? Or at least should be high in fat. Protein can kind of adjust to fit that. But I was on that diet. I went and had my blood tested for, I think I had really bad lower back pain. And I was like, this is not going away. And at the time, yeah, this would have been when I went to Apollo Bay. At the time, I was waking up in the mornings and my back was killing me. But it would get better throughout the day, which is a really weird kind of circumstance. For any of you guys who are nurses and doctors or know much about, I guess, diseases and all of that sort of stuff. Usually, it's the kind of thing where I think throughout the day, if you've got pain, it gets worse and worse and worse, especially if it's, you know, you've injured your leg. It should feel the best it's going to feel in the morning and then get worse throughout the day if you're walking on it, right? That seems to make sense. But the inverse was happening to me where I would wake up in the morning and my back would be bloody killing me. It would be horrible, so painful, I could barely stand up. And then it would get better during the day. And so, I looked it up. I was doing some Google searching, trying to work out what the hell would be causing this, right? Because I would imagine that my back should be fine in the morning because I've been lying down sleeping at night and then get way worse if I've got an injured spine or something or a muscle in there and I'm using it. It should start getting sorer and sorer throughout the day. It turned out the only thing that I could sort of see there was an inflammatory disease, right? Some sort of weird arthritis or inflammatory disease. So I ended up getting the blood test. I went to the doctor and was like, look, these are my symptoms. What do you reckon? And he's like, I don't know. It's one of these weird things that either we won't be able to figure out and it'll just disappear, or it'll be this rare, you know, condition related to inflammation and you're getting obviously inflamed in the back there somewhere, and it happens that way. You get sore in the morning. So I had the blood test to work that out and came back to him afterwards, and he's like, yeah, well, so it's not the inflammation, but you've got really high cholesterol, and if it doesn't go down, you're going to have to get on a statin. And a statin is a drug that effectively, again, from memory, I think it deregulates or downregulates the production of a certain enzyme or protein in your body that is associated with producing small LDL. So, this is the bad cholesterol. So, a statin, you take this medication and it effectively stops you from producing anywhere near the kinds of dangerous levels of small LDL cholesterol that would lead to inflammation in your arteries and potentially a heart attack in 10, 20, 30 years. So, he was kind of like, wow, shit, you're only 34 and you have high cholesterol like this. We need to do another blood test in 3 months, 4 months, and see if you can change your diet, change your environment effectively, right? Change what you're putting into your face, what you're eating, and if that makes any big difference. If it doesn't and your cholesterol stays the same, obviously, it's genetic and you need to get on a statin. So, as someone who's kind of like trying to avoid medicating my issues, especially with regards to things like physical health, I'd rather change my diet or lose weight or, you know, yeah, whatever it is. If I can do those kinds of changes, I would rather do that than get on a medication to kind of treat the symptoms of the underlying problem that might be behavioral. So, I went for 4 months changing my diet, and you guys, I think quite a few of you guys were asking me, what were you doing and how's it going and is there any news? So, I went on a sort of deep dive for about a week trying to work out what I could do to lower my cholesterol through my diet. And again, as I said in the episode when I talked about this, I'm not a doctor. Do not take this as medical advice. You know, that's the disclaimer, but I'm more than happy to sort of tell you what I've done and the results that I got. Okay, so if you do have high cholesterol, please, for the love of God, go and talk to your doctor and get advice from them. Do not take what I say as gospel and assume that will solve your problem, okay? So, always do that. Always do that. Speak to your clinician, to your doctor. That aside, the disclaimer aside, what did I do? So, I went on to check some of the sort of trustworthy websites that were medical websites, right? So, you can kind of work these out by just getting on Google. And I mean, it's one of these things you kind of develop as you go through numerous science degrees. You can kind of, you get a good sense for what is bullshit and what isn't bullshit online. But I do admit it can be quite difficult. But first, the first thing I would do was go online and try and find doctors who were, you know, had a sort of social influencer presence and had blog posts or videos discussing cholesterol and how to reduce it. And, you know, I'm sure that there's lots of dodgy information out there, but the key to good sense making in this area is verifying, not just listening to a single source and taking that as gospel. Right? An expression there that means just assuming that it's true, it's exact, it is right. But fact checking, comparing different doctors to one another and seeing what's consistent. So, I found a few of these sort of influencers online, and that was the first thing. It was just like, watch a few of these 5-minute videos on YouTube and what are the general things that they're saying, you know? And some of them were obviously remove saturated fat from your diet. So, you know, meats that are high in saturated fat, that have a lot of fat around the outside. So, things like steaks that have the fat there, pork or bacon, you know, that sort of stuff. Also, reducing things like dairy intake. You know, they were saying those sorts of things. Then, they started mentioning things like improving or increasing the amount of fiber that you have in your diet. I didn't realize that apparently the amount of dietary fiber that you have will actually absorb a lot of the saturated fat in your food and cause it to pass through. A polite way of saying, you know, when you go to the toilet, the saturated fat gets absorbed, sits there, it doesn't go into your blood and gets passed through your digestive system and goes out. So, there was that. And then there were some interesting comments about things like garlic and lemon juice. So, yeah. So, the first thing I did was kind of read blogs that were listing these things and making sure that it was an actual doctor who'd written this, you know, checking their credentials, looking at some of these videos on YouTube as well. And I know a lot of you are going to be like, Pete, what the fuck? What the fuck? That's not a good way of doing it. I understand that. Wait. I'm getting to it. After I kind of had a list of things that I had heard multiple sources mention, the key thing here now, which you guys can do too, is go to Google Scholar. Okay, so you type in Google Scholar and go to it's scholar.google.com. You can then type in cholesterol and say garlic and lemon. And what Google Scholar will do is bring up studies that have been done, scientific peer-reviewed studies that have been published that have tested the efficacy, the effectiveness of these sorts of claims. So, what I did after I had kind of gotten this list of suggestions from doctors online was try and check by looking at Google Scholar, are there actually scientific studies that have looked at whether or not these different things actually reduce cholesterol? And it can be intimidating to kind of jump on there, especially if you're not a scientist. But the good thing is anyone can access this. Okay, so if I were to, I'm on Google Scholar at the moment, type in cholesterol, lemon, garlic. A study I found on here, and there are quite a few that have actually looked at this, and I, prior to this, I had no idea that garlic or lemon were at all related to cholesterol. But there was a study that came up that effectively looked at whether consuming garlic, lemon, or both lemon and garlic would reduce your levels of cholesterol. And there was a meta-analysis, I think, that was done on this. So, it looks like it's the top one that comes up, right? And I just read through that. And the findings were, you could even just read the abstract effectively, but the findings came out as if you consume garlic and lemon juice together, you reduce cholesterol significantly more than if you just consume garlic or lemon juice. And both of those also had a positive effect. So, I guess, long story short, that was the way that I kind of tried to make sense of the information out there. And ironically, it was one of those things where I asked the doctor, I was like, what are the kinds of things I can do to reduce my cholesterol level? And he was pretty much just like, stop eating saturated fat. And I was like, is there anything else? Do you have any other suggestions? And that was it. That was sort of the limit of his knowledge. Just stop eating too much fat. And I was like, there have to be other things that I can do. There have to be other things that I can either remove or add to my diet that's going to hopefully have an effect on reducing cholesterol. So, yeah, this was the process. Find a list of things that you hear multiple sources that are trustworthy saying, fact check it with scientific literature using something like Google Scholar, and then work out what you're going to do with your diet. So, that's effectively what I did. I ended up taking saturated fat out. I stopped eating beef and bacon, you know, reduced those sorts of things. I was eating much more fish, much more chicken. I think that was another thing too. I was having fish oil. So, those really good fish oils, I think, are associated with reducing cholesterol levels. I was having fish oil pills, garlic pills, as well as just consuming more garlic in my food. Lemon juice. You can just buy lemon juice in a bottle and just add a little bit to water, and it tastes amazing. It's kind of like a low-sugar cordial. So, I was doing that. And then, I was just smashing fibrous foods, eating a lot. So, you can get wheat bix, you can get whole grain breads, you can get all sorts of things that have a lot of fiber in them. And then, I was adding in too flaxseed powder into wheat bix. and consuming that. And you don't even notice it's there, but that has heaps of fiber in there. Flaxseed powder was another one of these listed suggestions. And then on top of that, I was having Metamucil, which is... What is Metamucil? It's a certain seed. Metamucil is what? Let's type this into Google. Psyllium, it's psyllium husk. Okay, so Metamucil is like, apparently I think psyllium husk is one of these sort of seed husk things that is just chock-a-block full of fiber. And so if you consume that, it's obviously going to absorb a lot of this fat out of your, out of the stuff that you consume. So I was smashing that with Weet-Bix. I was just doing everything, right? I was reducing all of the bad food, the dairy as well, bumping up fiber, having more garlic, having lemon juice, and also having fish and fish oil frequently. And then I went back, had my blood test the other day, and he's like, "Wow, wow, you got it out of the danger zone, the danger zone." He was like, "What did you do?" So I gave him the rundown a little bit quicker than what I've done for you guys here. But yeah, it was effectively like, I've just added all these things, removed these things, and that's the result. So good news is I don't have to get on a statin, at least currently. He's just like, just do a blood test every year and see how you go. But it is one of those things where he's kind of like, if you do just want to eat whatever, just get on the statin and you don't have to think about anything. So that side of it is nagging. Right, because I'm like, God damn, I miss beef, I miss bacon, I miss just, yeah, smashing whatever food and not thinking about it, lots of dairy. So, well. Anyway, guys, I think that's probably enough. hopefully you enjoyed this episode. Hopefully, it wasn't too much of an overshare, but I thought I would share those aspects of my life and answer that question from Lee. And hopefully leave you guys... Sorry for coughing, guys. Still recovering from this. Hopefully, leave you guys with a bunch of things to think about. So, yeah. Thank you for joining me, guys. It's been a pleasure. This has been an episode of Pete's Two Cents. And I will see you next time. All the best.